The number you dialed is not in service.
The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself while shaving, now I can't make a call. We couldn't get much worse, but if they could, they would. Oh, they live on for the best, expect the worst.
And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Hook. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Wednesday evening, joined tonight by Kyle.
Hello.
And out in Signal Land, we have Rob T. Firefly. No, we don't. Why don't we have Rob T. Firefly? I just hear him. Do we have Alex?
You've got Alex here.
Okay.
You hear me?
Rob, can you say something? Yep. Bob, use your mouth.
Yeah, can you something. Hear?
Okay, there
am
you
I?
There you are. Okay,
there I am.
I'm hearing some weird sounds too. And is Gila there?
Gila is trapped in a transit mishap right now. She'll be here as soon as she can.
All right, let's hope that's soon. Well, this is our post hope show. This happens every year about this time, where we just kind of are recovering still from a crazy weekend, which we've been building up to for the past year or so. This one was particularly interesting because it was the first one without our dear friend Greg, who somebody who poured his heart and soul into these events and made them possible, made them the incredible events they were. It's also a time where we had to scramble because we were kicked out of St. John's University for attendees having a pamphlet that insulted police, or they alleged it insulted police. It's the most ridiculous thing. But they showed how intolerant they are and how undemocratic they are, kicked us out without even talking to us first. But you know what? We're happy about this because we wound up at the New Yorker Hotel, which turned out to be an incredible venue, much reminiscent of the old Hotel Pennsylvania. I'd like to go around the room and ask folks what they thought of this briefly. We'll have time to get into more of this. And at 8 o'clock, we'll be opening up phone lines on YouTube at Channel 2600 for those of you who were there and have thoughts, comments, questions, opinions, various things like that. Of course, we want to hear all that from our BAI listeners as well. I believe next week we'll be doing a call-in show there. Or here, rather, at 7 o'clock. So you can also write to us, oth@2600.com. Let's start with Rob. Go ahead.
Yeah, this was a delight, this event. The New Yorker was so good to us, I think, in ways in which we weren't even necessarily anticipating. But the sheer spirit around the place was a lot like what it had been over at the Hotel Penn, but more so. And it was an event filled with such joy and positivity and fun. There was such a sense of fun about it that I think really, really really eclipses, I don't know, past events, but like it, I had a real good time the entire time. And there were excellent talks, there were excellent, workshops and performances. And it was a pleasure to be part of all of it.
Okay, Alex, you're next.
Well, I'll tell you, I'm still exhausted. I am totally exhausted from, I think, an action-packed, and it didn't just start on Friday and go through Sunday. I mean, really, everything kicked off on Thursday night, and, you know, we had an amazing time.
Is that what you think, Alex? Everything kicked off Thursday night? We weren't doing anything before then?
I mean, I know you guys didn't really jump into action at all until what, Sunday evening?
Right. Okay.
Lifted a finger.
Just continue here. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's right. Well, at least for me, I mean, obviously I was working hard on the three panels that I had to try. I mean, I was on stage Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, spent a large amount of time on the Grand Ballroom stage, and true to its name, I mean, I had a ball. I really loved it. And I kept saying, leading up to this, I think this is going to be one of the best hopes yet. And I was right. I really do think this was one of the best ones. Everybody, I think, universally was so incredibly happy to be back in Manhattan, to be back in a hotel, to have that same Hotel Pennsylvania feeling again. But more importantly, to my mind, and starting on Thursday and going into the bar where we had a whole bunch of the speakers hanging out before the conference was started, I felt like I was walking into the Star Wars bar that night, just looking at all of the various people and the different styles and the craziness. And it made me feel right at home, walking into a place that was full of weirdos, full of interesting people. It had a great vibe, I think, from before it even started. So I think great job, both of you, to the whole core committee, to everybody who helped put Hope together, which is an incredible amount of people. But it had a feeling to me of the first Hope back in 1994, where things are beginning again. Things are starting anew. It's like springtime for the Hackers on Planet Earth conference in my mind, because I think we are back. We're back to Manhattan. We're back in a hotel. We're in the hotel where Nikola Tesla lived and died. There's history. There's vibes there. And I think we felt it all.
Yeah, I can't disagree with any of that. It definitely had a special feeling to it that I haven't felt in quite a while. And that first conference back in 1994, yeah, it brings back memories of that as well. Welcome, Gila. Gila's here.
Thank you.
You got through the transit emergency.
I did. I would also like to point out that I took the train I was on because it was supposed to get me here 10 minutes earlier than another train. So this is all the feet of the MTA.
Uh-huh.
My apologies. Hi.
Did you recover from this weekend?
More or less. But then I was starting to watch some videos this afternoon, and I'm right back on the high right now. Mm-hmm. I did tell Rob I feel like we may have made a crucial error. I didn't make any phone calls from the hotel.
Oh, you know what? I didn't even think about that. But yeah, the hotel supposedly had free long distance calls to anywhere in the world, which is a hacker's dream.
Didn't do that.
Yeah, if anyone actually did that, please let us know. We'd like to know if you were able to reach people overseas, and I assume you didn't get billed for it. I totally forgot about that little aspect. Little gems like that. Somebody was able to get a tour of the downstairs old power plant from that was in the hotel. I had no time in my brain to even process that, but it's just one of the magical things that the place had to offer. Any special memories stick out to you?
Oh my goodness. Getting to meet a bunch of my Fediverse friends in person was a lot of fun. The excursion to the Break Bar on Saturday night.
You went to the Break Bar. Okay, tell us about what the Break Bar is.
The Break Bar is a bar, but their gimmick is that all the glassware is really inexpensive. And after you drink out of it, after you sign a waiver, can throw it against the wall. And there is a throwing range in the back, and you can buy a bucket of empty bottles and just throw things at the wall, really work out any tension you might have. It is so much fun. And yeah, a few of us went down. We had a great time. It's right around the corner. And yes, I will also say the 24-hour diner in the hotel, excellent, excellent, excellent. We came back from the break bar. I said, I want a grilled cheese sandwich. And so we did. Uh-huh. And no, some wonderful, fabulous talks, new ways to think about things I interact with every day and hadn't thought about in those perspectives, which is why you get to hear these talks. And Hacker's Got Talent was such a fantastic experience. It didn't feel like 2 hours.
You two guys, Rob and Gila, you hosted Hacker's Got Talent this year.
We sure did.
Jason Scott wasn't available. How did that go?
Rob?
Yeah, it was just such a great deal of fun. We went for almost 2 hours. Just there were amazing folks that came up to show off their talents, some elaborate, some silly, some both. Our judges for the event were our friends Kusanagi and Johannes. Jason was there in spirit as well as on a poster, on an easel. And it was just a lot of fun all around. We gave away some delightful things, and we had a lot of fun. It was a great experience, a lot of fun to do.
People ranging in age from 16. Our youngest contestant was 16. I didn't ask how old our oldest contestant was, but we had people significantly older than either of us. Mm-hmm. Everywhere in between, and there was just a spirit of great joy and camaraderie and hilarity in the room. I would also like to take this moment to thank our friend Rebel for answering my call, so to speak. Rebel took on the task of speed identifying area codes.
Oh, wow.
And
I understand he can do all the area codes, the original area codes, but not the new ones.
So we did limit it to original area codes. We said it's got to have a one or a zero in the middle. We know no overlay area codes for this project. And people are calling them out, and he was identifying them, and he did pretty well.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, you know, I always knew he could do that, but it's those new ones that are the real challenge. You know, if you can figure out where 934 is, that's a skill. Kyle, how about you? Any thoughts?
Oh, wow. It was so thoughtful. A lot of the discussion I was just blown away by. And I find the whole thing to have been surreal, just the way everything came together just miraculously in some ways.
Yeah.
But it's really a testament to all of the help and contributions from everybody for specific program items and attractions that we had been talking about, and we were able to spread out even beyond the hotel, and just doing more of that I think a great way to build that community that we are. So I just really was in real admiration of everybody who put things together and were doing self-organized things and teaching about things that people might not think of.
Yeah, and when you say we spread out, we certainly did. Thanks to a generous contribution, we were able to host a celebration the day before the conference to welcome people at a neighboring bar. Never done anything like that before. Across the street at the AMC Theater, we premiered a film, and it was free admission for anybody with a badge. Basically there are other informal examples of that, gatherings in different establishments that surrounded the place. And because we're, you know, right there on 8th Avenue, there are plenty of establishments surrounding the place, and people were just basically striking out on their own and finding all kinds of fun things to do and to share, and just wandering all over the city. It's really, you know, we love Queens, we really do. But you couldn't do that in Queens. And, you know, we heard the wishes that we could go back to Manhattan. And it was terrible because we just felt we never could. Now that we have nonprofit status, it makes things a lot easier. It makes it easier for people to be a part of the whole magical event. You know, I think there's all kinds of possibilities ahead. Our imagination is really the only limit.
I felt really comfortable in the space too. I was worried. We had some concerns, I think, from the production side, but the planning and design was phenomenal, and it didn't feel like there was not enough space, or you couldn't get a seat or anything like that.
Well, so. The weird thing is when you see the space, and we spent time walking through a lot of different spaces, but when you walk through, it just seems small, tiny. And I was very worried that it wasn't big enough for the number of people that were coming. We did have to cut things off at a certain point, because the last thing we want is overcrowding. But when everything was set up, and this is thanks to the people at the hotel and our AV team, it just seemed so big. It seemed so cavernous. There was room for so many people. And I wasn't aware of overcrowding at any of the talks. So that was definitely a coup. I'd like to share something and tie this into a story. Hang on one second. Yes. Does this ring a bell?
Yes.
Yeah. This is some of the music that we played in between talks. And I'm going to be a little bit cruel here. I'm going to ask people, can you identify which room and which day? Because we had a different tune for each room for each of the 3 days. I can't imagine anybody would actually be able to remember that. But go ahead, Gila.
My guess is this is from the Crystal Ballroom.
Go ahead, keep going.
And I'm going to guess Saturday.
Oh, you were so close. It's Crystal on Friday. And this is by an artist known as Vector. The track is called Between the Nodes. And this would play while announcements would show on the screen, telling people what the next talk was going to be, what the talks were in the other rooms, various other announcements and schedule changes and things like that. Now, the reason I'm going overboard tonight and playing these particular tracks is because I feel that some of these artists were shortchanged. And the reason they were shortchanged was due to our good friends over at Google/YouTube, who decided, and I'm not, this might actually be the piece, because I think it was the Crystal track, track two, in the middle of the night, about 3 a.m., Google decided that this was a violation of community guidelines or community standards, and to help protect the community, I'm using their words, they shut this down. Now, we had a YouTube channel. I thought this was a bad idea from the beginning, and it's sometimes you don't have a choice. You have to use what's available, and we had basically had the entire track from 10 a.m. to midnight broadcast without incident. And then overnight, the aforementioned announcements would show and the music would play. And about 3 in the morning, they sent an email to the email that's attached to the account we were using and said, this is a violation of community standards and you have to take this down. And the 3 in the morning, when you're in the middle of a conference like this, it's not likely you're going to be awake. So at 4 in the morning, they said you did not respond, and therefore we're simply cutting it off. And they cut all access to that channel. You couldn't go back and look at the talks that had happened that day in that particular channel, something that we wanted to be able to do. And we were also told that if this happened again, whatever this was, we would not be able to broadcast anything live, and we would have to finish a training to ensure that we were compliant in respecting community standards. Yeah, there were words that I came up with that I didn't even know that I knew when I found out about this. But it's just so infuriating when some stupid corporation decides to muscle its way in and completely screw up what you're trying to do, which was going so incredibly smoothly, up until the point they decided to make us worry about our own content. At that point, we reached out to our friends in Germany at Chaos Computer Club, the people who run the Chaos Communication Congress and the Chaos Communication Camps, and asked if we could use their resources, because they have a lot of resources. They really do, where they can pretty much rival YouTube as far as broadcasting things. Within minutes, I think, it was being set up. Yeah, I don't know why we didn't do it much sooner, but we didn't. And we have now, and we have an incredible connection that will never get taken down for such stupidity. But tonight, what I wanted to do was give these artists a little bit of airtime and notoriety as far as who they are, maybe where you can find their music and things like that. Of course, I'm speaking over it. I'm sorry about that, but we just don't have the airtime to play it all in its entirety. But I want to thank those people, those artists, for sending in their music, and I think it really made a difference for everybody in the conference. The conference wasn't affected. People at the conference heard everything the way they were supposed to hear it. This was for the virtual attendees and for people who are watching the stream on our website, at the Hope.net website. So, yeah, that was a bit of fun. You guys have anything to add to that?
Yeah, I mean, what fascinates me about that whole course of events is that the music that was chosen to play between talks and overnight, it's music that we, of course, had permission to use at the event. We had the artist's blessing, but it's also music that is instrumental. There are no lyrics. There is nothing being said or sung in these. And I am wondering how the, you know, music and beats and, you know, pure tone of the songs involved were in any way bad for the community, in any way against community standards.
We've moved into track number 3. This is Friday in the Gramercy Room. And this track is called Gulp. It's done by an artist known as Mylez, MY_LEZ. The album is called Mopey's Cud Skibble Exploits. And you'll have to figure out what that means. I think the last conference we had one track for the entire conference that we played every day between tracks. And it's a great track. It was done by Cameron Glass, and it was really well done, but it was the same track. And I think it drove some people crazy because they just wanted to hear more tracks. And we certainly, with the help of these people who wrote in and sent in their music, we were able to achieve that. And, you know, I think this particular conference, more than any other, showed the strength of the community. People getting together, all different backgrounds, all different philosophies and ideologies, and people out there supporting the event, supporting the community in ways that I just feel was stronger than ever, and so inspirational. Other people can speak, you know.
I'm just enjoying the music here.
Well, yeah, okay, I mean, that's great. You can do that anytime.
This is great, yeah. I think you should keep it in the background.
Well,
you know,
ended. It ended, Alex. I'm sorry. It was a short track. We looped it so people would be able to hear it throughout the 10-minute break. That was only a couple minutes long.
Yeah, I have heard that you can play tracks more than once, though. I've tried that, and it has worked for me in the past. But this is like you know, like it's kind of like a transistorization of the evils of centralization. That to me is what this is, like a prime example of, right? You got one company, YouTube, or really, I guess, what is it? Alphabet is the parent company of it, but essentially one company, one opaque decision that it's made, and it flips one switch and you have an entire community that loses access to a critical conference. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing you can do about it. They have a process. You have the right to be heard, but it's after the fact. It's too late, and too little, too late. Right? I mean, it's a terrible, terrible way of doing it. But I think the way that we solved it was the right way. It was probably the right way to have done it in the first place, and we won't make that mistake again. I don't think we'll ever.
To their credit, they did admit that they made a mistake. That we got a letter saying that they're reversing it. And but you know, the same thing can happen again at any moment. Right. And it's all done by algorithm. It's automated. You can't reach a human being. It's incredibly frustrating. And you know, we take it as normal. And that is the biggest problem, is that people think this kind of thing is normal. You mentioned you can play the same song several times in a row. Do you know that thanks to something called Sound Exchange, radio stations are not allowed to play more than three songs by the same artist in an hour? It's totally insane. It has, these are radio stations that broadcast over the internet as well as on over the air. And it's some antiquated philosophy that somehow broadcasting something digitally is resulting in piracy. We saw the same thing in the 1970s, where radio stations would play album sides. And the record industry thought that that would mean people wouldn't buy albums. The exact opposite, which was true. But in this particular case, it becomes normal that, oh, we can't play the same artist more than three times in an hour, even though that's probably a really good thing for any artist to be played three times in an hour. But because some corporate lawyer somewhere decided that was going to be normal, it's normal for everybody. Gila, you had something. Go ahead.
Well, I did. I was curious about a couple of things. Is there a place that someone can go and find all of the music and musicians that was played over the course of the conference?
Well, not yet, but we're trying to do that tonight by playing these songs. And this one, by the way, is one of three that was submitted by the same artist. This is Julie Jameson from the album Reflections, Pandemic Times. It's called Redefining Normal. And you can find her music at juliejamesonmusic.bandcamp.com. That's Jameson spelled J-U-L-I-E-J-A-M-I-E-S-O-N-M-U-S-I-C. Go ahead, Gita, finish with your thought.
Well, the other thing I was wondering was if someone had seen in the schedule about how to de-Google your org, and they just kind of preemptively struck you for that. But
you have to wonder. Well, you have to wonder because, you know, if you're a large company with a presence on the internet or part of the internet controlling it, there's probably a lot at the conference that would make you upset, and if you could control it, you would probably try to quash it, much like St. John's tried to do that to us because they didn't like reading material of a particular group.
This was Sunday, right?
No, everything I'm playing is from Friday. This is Friday in the Grand Ballroom, was the biggest ballroom. Yes, we're almost finished with Friday. Yes, but we had so many other memories. How many of you were part of the march?
I was.
Well, tell us about
Unfortunately,
I was holding up our original Hackers on Planet Earth banner.
Uh-huh.
This one is not the yellow banner that I think a lot of people think of, which is a lot bigger. It's a square one. This one's wider, and we were holding it in front of the property there as...
Well, you didn't say where the march was to.
To Hotel Pennsylvania.
From the New Yorker Hotel. So basically, people met in the lobby of the new hotel and marched down 34th Street to the site of the old hotel. Now, our good friend Johannes from Austria was there leading the march. He insisted that everybody march in complete silence, and they did. And when we got there... The silence really ended. What would you call what happened at that point, Kyle? A sermon? A speech? Just this passionate expression of emotion?
Well, really it was a reawakening, I think. And we all were tapping into the deep trauma that was... this building having been destroyed, but we honored the hole in the ground there and saw ourselves resurrecting, in particular noting what we'd left behind with our previous venue and just many different great writers and thinkers were cited in those words.
I'd say we had we had over 60 people on that march. I mean, it was not an insignificant march.
Oh, it was well attended. Yeah.
And it was right across the street from, you know, the main entrance to Penn Station on 7th Avenue, and Madison Square Garden and all that. I thought the funny part was that nobody really was noticing. You know, people just going about their business, walking past us while all this shouting and gesticulating was going on. Just a normal day in New York. Gila?
Can you unmute us, please?
Sorry.
It's Midtown Manhattan. You can't be confused by anything strange that's going on.
No, that's true.
Yeah. If you were distracted by everything strange that was going on in Midtown Manhattan, you'd never get anything accomplished.
Very true. Very true. We have started another piece by Julie Jameson. This was Saturday in the Crystal Ballroom. And this is from the album 10 Warped Cyberpunk Dreams. And it's called Open Secrets. And again, you can find music at juliejamesonmusic.bandcamp.com. Alex, tell us about the talks you moderated. You moderated three different talks throughout the weekend. It was incredible to witness.
Yeah, it was a lot. It was a lot, and it was an interesting experience for me too, because, you know, as the moderator, you put a lot of these things together. You put the spine on these talks, and you think about how they're going to go. And if I look at the three of them, they are, to my mind, kind of like, I don't know, I saw a lot of what I thought about the topics before I was on stage and talking with the panelists. I saw a lot of that disintegrating before my eyes. I felt like these three talks were kind of like a spintharyscope in many ways, that, you know, something that you can look through and see, you know, these notions of like nuclear materials just kind of disintegrating before your eyes. And I could see that with the audience, that certain mythologies were being dispelled and they were learning certain new things and had certain insights about things. And I was right there with them on stage. And even though I put these talks together, I was learning a tremendous amount from the panelists who were so brilliant, so professional, and so entertaining that, you know, I had a great time. I think I spent a total of about four and a half hours or so on that stage over the weekend, with the first one being the Epstein files and the leaks, the Epstein files leaks. And we even had, I think this is kind of historical in many ways, but we had the hacker with us online who had breached the Epstein files and handed them over to Distributed Denial of Secrets. That hacker's name was Kyrie. And that hacker was not there on screen. And the only way that we were interacting was through typing. And, you know, obviously that was for operational security reasons, because this particular hacker, Kyrie, didn't want their face or their voice to be heard by anybody. And they really led us into, I think, the mindset of where they were at the time when they breached these files, realized what they were, and the fallout from sharing them and the paranoia that goes along with being a whistleblower, all of those sacrifices that go along with making sure those materials got out to the public because they were very squarely within the public interest. I think we asked some really pointed questions. I would very much tell people, journalists, etc., to take a look at that talk and review it, because I think there's a lot that's going to shake out from the insights that came out of that particular talk. And then the next one was on Saturday, and that was with Cindy Cohn, who is the now retired, but executive director of the Electronic Frontier Foundation. And she was debating, or rather, I guess it was more of a discussion with Denise Talu, who was the CEO of Privado, a kind of privacy protection company, and they debated, or discussed, because it was civil. No, it did get heated a little bit. And this was a two-hour talk. They discussed age assurance, age verification mechanisms online, something that we've talked about quite a bit on this show. And then the third one on Sunday was Blue Leaks 2.0, talking about the breach of police data that happened first in 2020, and then again, Blue Leaks 2.0 was just a few months ago, this spring in 2026, when another bucket of documents and data was released this time from Crime Stoppers, all of these supposedly and allegedly anonymous tips that are made to a private party and supposed to be kept confidential were breached and then released to the public. And we had Mikhail Thelen, who was the journalist that broke that particular story, up on stage with us. So it was an action-packed weekend for me, full of insights. Sadly, we had to not have Maya and Emma Best from Distributed Denial of Secrets on the stage with us for the Blue Leaks 2.0 talk, because they both fell ill, sadly. It would have been great to have them on there. So to fill the gap on stage, I brought up my 8-year-old son, who had answered quite a few questions on stage and was extremely entertaining, and I think really prescient in many ways.
Had remarkable insight into many of those important issues. By the way, we are now listening to Eclipse by the artist Electro Faustus, and you can find that music at soundcloud.com/Electro Faustus, which is spelled ELECTROFAUSTUS. And that was played Saturday in the Gramercy Room. So that's we're more than halfway done with all the music that played throughout the conference. It was really, a lot of people wanted to know what it was. And we were showing slides throughout, telling people what the music was. But again, as we mentioned, YouTube kind of made it difficult for us to show that to the people around the world. Now, there's been quite a bit of talk about watching videos, and they're up in various places, but they are not up officially, and we're working on that. We're trying to get it up as quickly as we possibly can in various YouTube channels and other sources as well, because we certainly don't want YouTube to be the only place where these videos exist. They will exist throughout at the CCC site. And pretty much anywhere else. Alex, you mentioned Cindy Cohn, from former executive director from EFF. She also gave a talk on Friday, which was 90 minutes in length. And I got to say that was pretty eye-opening, pretty incredible, talking about some of the same issues, but also what it was like to be part of the EFF for years, how it's evolved, and her relationship with some of us. It was very inspirational. It was just so cool to see all these people coming together with all different levels of experience. Some were in high school, some were retired, some were leading civil rights organizations of one sort or another. We had people from Fight for the Future, and it was staggering. It really was amazing.
I mean, what was funny to me is, you know, I couldn't believe it when I had asked people at the outset of the Cindy Cohn talk on Saturday, the discussion about age verification. At the outset of that session, I said to everyone in the audience, and it was a pretty packed house there, said, you know, how many of you is this your first hope? And about half the people raised their hand. It was kind of extraordinary to me to see how many newcomers there were to hope. It was really reassuring. And then one most surprising person who raised their hand was Cindy Cohn, you know, on stage. And she said, this is my first hope,
wow,
too. And
I never thought of that, but you're right.
But I actually corrected her. And I said, no, Cindy, actually, I beg to disagree here, this is not your first hope. Because if you remember back 6 years ago, the Hope 2020, the mm-hmm. online hope, I actually interviewed Cindy Cohn online. And so I had to remind her, no, you were actually part of Hope 6 years ago, but it was the online version. So I don't know if that one counts.
Yeah, a lot of people don't count that one. A lot of people,
how could you
skip
not? That
over
was
2020.
9 days.
9 days long, but nobody met in person, and that was kind of sad. But you know, we did the best we could in 2020, and that's all online now as well. You can re-experience the whole thing. This piece right now was from the Grand Ballroom on Saturday by Rob E. Cohen. The song is called Four Men Hits, 33's Egg Ends Strike. that's got clever meaning behind it as well. It can be found at rob-e-cohen.bandcamp.com as well. We'll let them explain what the song means if they feel like it. So, who else has a memory they'd like to share, or a question or a thought? Rob?
One thing I'd like to shout out, some people I'd like to shout out, are the many listeners to this program who came up to us over the course of the conference. I know Gila and I experienced this. I'm assuming you all did too, which is people just coming up and saying hi. And we got a bunch of thanks for what we do on this program and on this station. We had some delightful discussions with folks, either quick chats or, you know, long discussions into the night of the time of the sort that happened at events like this. And it was truly great to meet a bunch of you. It was great to hang out and experience this with you. It was a lot of fun. It's always a gift when we can do that.
What was really cool was just kind of hanging out on 8th Avenue at all hours of the day and night, and just having conversations, not only with the people at the conference, but people just walking down the street. Some of them were curious about what was going on.
Yeah, you get that impression there's people from all over the world arriving and leaving and going out for the night or coming back in from a night they've spent in New York City. And I heard all sorts of different languages and just other activity as we took, you know, a chance to step outside ourselves. So that was really kind of neat and reminded me of Hotel Pennsylvania, which often had big tour groups and all kinds of different other visitors.
Yeah, but you know, the thing about this place, 8th Avenue seems a lot busier than 7th Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't realize that, but boy, there was a lot going on all the time. Everybody who's in an ambulance apparently goes down 8th Avenue. That was something else. But you know, I just like to think that people have seen New York for the first time. This is how they saw it, you know, at a hacker convention, in a hotel in the middle of Midtown, in a very loud area, but a very friendly area as well. And I just hope people go back with that impression of New York City. Yes, Gila.
I did want to follow up the friendly environs and neighborhood. So Saturday night, Hackers Got Talent started at 10, and we wanted to make sure that we were going to be awake. So we went across the street to the Starbucks right before it closed, and I got a triple shot iced latte because I wanted to be awake. And the young person behind the counter saw our speaker badges and said, "Oh my gosh, this is so cool. What is your talk? I've been finding out about everybody's..."
Wow.
"So I've been finding about everybody's talks. This conference sounds so exciting. Everybody is so nice. What is your talk?" And we said, "Well, you know, we're emceeing Hackers Got Talent." And they were like, "That sounds so exciting." So it wasn't just the people in the hotel, and it wasn't just the people in the rooms with us, but like the neighborhood was starting to get it. You know, the guy at Essen was starting to recognize us and like ask how we were doing.
And yeah, a little cafe nearby.
The folks at the Staples. Wow. I mean, just, it's, you know, it's 34th and 8th. You know, it could not be
those
busier.
Those folks at Staples, my God, they were having some kind of drama involving pie.
And well, somebody brought two pies.
Someone brought two pies.
They had some pie and somebody busted into the second pie.
Someone opened the second pie. And
that's just, honestly, I'm with them. Like, come on, why are you going into the second pie?
No, you shouldn't have done that. But
although
still,
it's,
you
none
know,
of my business, so I'm not.
We're customers waiting patiently for 20 minutes while they're debating their pie issues. This piece right now is from Crystal, not the person Crystal, the room Crystal on Sunday. We were playing this between talks. It's by an artist known again as My Lez. Second piece from them, MY_LEZ. The album is Mopey's Cuscable Exploits, which I believe is the same album as before. And the song is called Navigational Prowess. And you can find them at fmarchives.bandcamp.com. A lot of people on Bandcamp, I've noticed. Wow. Alex, go ahead.
I love what you said before, Gila. I want to say that. I mean, I just think that is super cool about being essentially accosted about your talk by the barista at the Starbucks. But look, I think that this just goes to show us, right? Like, we're the cool kids now, right? I think this definitely is a personification of that old 80s movie, Revenge of the Nerds, right? Now we have become the cool kids. Everybody wants to hang out with us. Everybody loves the hacker culture. They know we're up to interesting things. They know that, you know, if they go to this conference, they're going to learn something. They're going to have their mind expanded. Just think about the cross-section of people that we had speaking at the conference. We had people that couldn't show their face on stage or even release their any audio of their voice because of the fear of law enforcement. And then in the next breath, you have former FBI agents on stage talking about redirection programs for young hackers. You had my wife on stage on Sunday, who gave a talk about intimate partner violence, and she's a former prosecutor and was up there with a couple of prosecutors from the Brooklyn DA's office. You have, you know, just this crazy cross-section of people, of scientists, of thinkers, of doers, of dreamers, all coming together in one crazy hotel for a weekend. It was a wonderful time. I really am looking forward to the next one. I really want to reiterate again that I think this is a new beginning. This is a renaissance of sorts for the Hope Conference. I'm so glad we're back in Manhattan.
And this piece was from the Gramercy Room on Sunday. It's the final piece by Julie Jameson. It's called Neon Shadows from the album 10 Warp Cyberpunk Dreams. Again, able to be found on juliejamesonmusic.bandcamp.com. We have one more track left. And this is the last track. This is from Sunday in the Grand Ballroom. It's called Had a Spark by Todd Mazierski. And that can be found on toddmazierski.com. I'm going to spell that for you. TODDMAZIERSKI.com. I want to thank everybody who submitted the music to us, including those who weren't selected. Please keep it up. Keep composing and creating and just making the world that much better. It certainly helped us over the weekend. It certainly made the environment so much more pleasant for attendees and those watching online as well. But we still have more to talk about. You know, one of the stars of Hackers popped in for a talk. Rinoli Santiago, who you might recall, played Phantom Freak. No, you don't know him as Phantom Freak? Well, how about the King of 9X? Huh? Yeah? Okay, maybe that rings a bell. I realized that film, you know, love it or hate it, it was a lot of fun. And I know there was a lot of critique from the community when it first came out, but it's 31 years later now, and I have to say, it's aged very well. People really seem to be drawn to it. And having Rinoli come by and just tell some stories and let us know what he's been up to over the past few decades and what he's doing now, that was magic. That was a lot of fun. And I'm so happy that that came to be. Spent hours signing autographs and taking pictures. It was really kind of amazing right there. But one of many magical moments that just happened this weekend. Were you guys around for that, or were you off in other magical moments? Because there were so many.
I was definitely there for that. It was entertaining because he was late to his own event, having been trapped elsewhere in the city, and like Argila tonight, caught in sort of a transit mishap situation. But he showed up, having run up the street, and it was fun, you know. Some of us are huge nerds for that movie, and even I think the huge nerds learned a couple of things from you and him and Wynn Schwartau talking about it.
Now, it's interesting you should mention the name Wynn Schwartau, because he's somebody I have not seen in quite a long time. but he was on a panel at our very first conference in 1994. It was called the Author Panel, and you can find this on our YouTube channel, Channel 2600. Basically, he was an author. He's an author still, writing about hacker issues. So he was on that panel. I was there with him. The director of Hackers was there. Now, Hackers had not even filmed yet. It was a script at this point. Raphael Moreau was there. He's the writer who unfortunately passed away in 2021 from COVID. And there were a bunch of people. Julian DeBell from The Village Voice. Paul Tuff from Harper's. There were a lot of hacker authors, people writing about hackers back in 1994. So Wynn Schwartau happened to be at this particular conference. And of course, you know, it wasn't planned, but especially when we found out that Rinaldi was still on the 7 train and still had a few stops to go and the panel was beginning, I kind of pulled Wynn up on stage and said, yeah, you've got stories, you've got things to talk about. And he sure did. It was an incredible, a fly by night type of a thing that we threw together at the last minute. I mean, the panel was planned, but all the mishaps weren't. But that just made it more special, I think. And it was great fun.
I did hear that I owe Rinaldi Santiago royalties for my haircut.
Yes, he did claim to have originated your haircut, the one that you happen to have right now.
I have curly hair and an undercut, as he did in the movie. And yes, he claimed to have popularized the haircut upon my very head right now. I am glad to know that because I, you know, just thought it was my hairstylist's compromise when I wanted to cut all my hair off in 2020.
That is hard to believe and something I never would have guessed in 1,000 years. But credit where credit is due, I guess. All right. Well, you know, if you are at the conference and you wish to share some feedback with the conference organizers, the email address for that is feedback@hope.net. We'd love to hear your feelings, constructive criticism, critiques, ideas, all kinds of things. And if you want to write to us here at Off the Hook, OTH@2600.com. This piece was not played at our talks. This is from the movie Hackers. Yeah, great soundtrack. We will see you here again next week between 7 and 8. We'll be taking phone calls on WBAI, but we'll be taking phone calls in a few minutes on YouTube, Channel 2600, or the link at the top of 2600.com. And, yeah, we'll be talking about hope there too, I guess. And you're welcome to call us and share your experiences. Have a good night.